It's tariff time. Donald Trump has announced new tariffs designed to preserve America's aluminum and steel industry. Just what impact will these have on our economy, though, both in the long and short terms? Bob Wenzel is a prominent Orthodox libertarian blogger. He dislikes tariffs on general principle. He's also an Austrian economist. He joins us to discuss Trump's tariffs and what he thinks they'll mean for the country. I'm your co-host, Joseph Forcato, editor-in-chief of the San Francisco Books. Also joining us is my co-host, Paul Godfrey, head of our editorial board, and this is Cotto Godfrey.
Donald Trump recently imposed new tariffs on steel and aluminum products coming from most countries, although he made exceptions for Mexico, Canada, and Australia. He claims that these tariffs will help the United States' domestic steel and aluminum industries become more prosperous and competitive, at least in the American market, because of far cheaper goods which can be brought from overseas. Now, this is quite popular in Pennsylvania and in Ohio and a few other places in the Rust Belt where he won and where he absolutely needs to win again if he wants to have a positive showing in 2020. It's also good for Republicans there who are running for re-election in this year's midterms. So on the whole, this seems to be a win for him. My perspective, I've always been someone who's very friendly toward tariffs, to a large extent because when I was growing up, not too long after NAFTA was imposed, and I was spending my middle school years in Pennsylvania, I saw the terrible, terrible destruction which came about because of all those jobs, the manufacturing jobs, a great deal of which revolved around steel, being sent overseas. And it's really something hard to put into words, but you can see it all around you, the closed factories, the hopelessness on the faces of people who used to work in those factories, and the economic malaise, which brings about many social problems in its wake. But, of course, not everyone believes the same way I do on this. Bob, I know, doesn't. So, Bob, tell me where you stand on anything I just mentioned.
Okay, Joseph, the key really is to understand that the world is always changing. So just because someone has lost a job, that doesn't mean it's the end of the world for the person. There's plenty of opportunities in the world, and as long as the wage is not zero, there's a signal out there that there's demand for people and demand for labor, maybe not for a particular job, but for some jobs. So the idea that somehow without tariffs it's protecting jobs that wouldn't otherwise be there, it may be the case with regard to a specific job, but not necessarily to jobs in general. And as I said, the world is always changing. There's always new technologies coming out. We'll soon have driverless cars, and there won't be necessity for drivers. There were once buggy whip makers, and we don't need those anymore. And you're just always seeing a change in the world, and to sort of try and attempt to stop that change is really you're trying to make a static world when the world isn't going to be static. So that's my initial point, but the general point with regard to tariffs is A, they do nothing but raise prices internally, and they shrink the standard of living for the general population.
I don't care that much about this issue, but when it comes up, I find myself conflicted. Now, on the one hand, I agree with what much of Bob is saying. I think that change is inevitable. Technological innovation will inevitably result in disruption and somebody losing a job somewhere. I also dislike the fact that tariffs now are simply one more power given to a government that already has a runaway power. Now, if somebody would ask me, would I favor a tariff in the 1840s when that was the only tax the federal government was collecting? My answer is yes. Would you favor it right now if it's one more tax or taxing power which the government has? Because they abuse it. They use just about anything for social engineering to punish people who are not political or politically incorrect. I mean, you know my views on this. So I really do not want to yield more power to the government in terms of tariff. I also think that what Trump has now done goes well beyond punishing China or other countries which engage in cheating and dumping and play all kinds of games with us. And I think he might be perfectly justified in trying to address these issues, but the general tax on steel and aluminum clearly goes well beyond China. On the other hand, on the third hand or fourth hand, I don't know where I am now, it may not be as bad as it looks, because it's sort of what I gather from what Trump has been doing the last day or two is trying to negotiate or renegotiate agreements with Canada, Mexico, other countries. And I think at the end of the day, he might, in fact, be dealing with China and a few other countries and, you know, sort of giving them an ultimatum rather than imposing the steel and aluminum tax across the board. And I do agree with Bob that doing this kind of stuff is ultimately going to hurt a lot of consumers and probably will result in some kind of trade war, which is not going to benefit us internally. So those are my very, very complex views on this very complex subject.
It is complex, to say the least.
Right.
To respond to something Bob said in the first part of his response, before he spoke generally about his views on tariffs, the steel and aluminum industries still are relevant to the United States economy. It's not quite like horses and buggies. So people still have a need for steel. They still have a need for aluminum.
Right.
And therefore, I wouldn't say a tariff on them is like trying to preserve, you know, horse and buggies or 8-track machines or something totally obsolete like that. I do believe that the people who live in these depressed areas are not likely to be retrained for something more oriented toward the 21st century economy, just because I've known of a good deal of them, and it's just I can't see their culture being realigned to an extent that they are prone to, you know, become techies or something like that. I just don't see it. So they really
Joseph. Continue.
Sure. Joseph. They really don't seem to have a lot of hope outside of these industries which their families have worked in for generations on end, unless they then go on public assistance or something, which is, I think, a scenario all three of us would find completely unacceptable. So it seems like it is a rock and a hard place. You're caught between them. And I don't think that other than tariffs, there's a chance to preserve this vital American economic sector, steel and aluminum. Mm-hmm. And you could talk about other things, but really those are the only the two big things up for discussion here.
Yeah, first of all, as far as Trump, it's really difficult to know where he's going to go, especially with the advisors that he has around him now, with Gary Cohn gone. I mean, Cohn came out of Goldman Sachs, and he's a crony Wall Street guy, but he was pretty good on free trade. And with these guys like Navarro, Wilbur Ross, and Lightsear around him, these guys are all anti-trade, and they're going to be pushing him in a very anti-trade way. As a matter of fact, Joseph, you mentioned that Trump announced exemptions for Mexico, Canada, and Australia. Well, the exemption for Australia is already gone. So, you know, it just shows you the kind of influence and that is coming around Trump, and it's not good as far as that is concerned. As far as the steel workers, you know, in the United States, I mean, the most flexible commodity in the world is labor. It can do many, many, many different things. And there's always what I call a basic wage, which is a wage that doesn't require great demand as far as skills and talents and things like that. And no one is going to leave people around in an area where they can employ them cheaply to do something. I mean, for a while, a lot of the call centers, I believe, came out of the middle of the country. Now I think a lot of them are overseas, as we know, when we make customer service calls. But that only tells you that the call centers, those people have greater demand somewhere else rather than working in those jobs. But there's there's this just sort of basic level of income, the basic wage that is out there, and that's always going to be there. So if a steel job is gone, it's not like the people are not going to be able to get some other job. The wage does not go down to zero. It would make no sense for that to happen. Just logically, it's basic economics. It just doesn't happen. And then what you see is because the steel is being made from outside the country, we have the opportunity to do other things. For example, we're all basically in the world of ideas, all three of us. And if a lot of stuff wasn't done for us from, I just bought some bookshelves and I noticed on the packages they all came from China. Well, if trade was cut down so much, if elimination of the division of labor was cut down so much that we had to, saw the wood and put the holes in the bookcases and all that, and you'd never want to see the kind of bookcase I'd assemble on my own. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the division of labor allows us to do things that we would never be able to do. Let the Chinese make the steel and the aluminum, and we'll be the great philosophers and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's really to an advantage to have other people do all this stuff for us.
Well, my question is, will the people living in a Rust Belt, which extends all the way from eastern Pennsylvania to Waterloo, Iowa, and you can just go from one place to the other and see high, and you can also include most of the cities in upstate New York, they are absolute economic deserts right now, and they've suffered because they have lost heavy industry. And I know across Pennsylvania and Ohio into Indiana, these cities have lost steel and iron production and aluminum production. And these people are not going to become philosophers. I grant you that in the long term, the long term we're all dead, I suppose, as John Maynard Keynes pointed. But in the long term, there may be some kind of adjustment that takes place. I'm sure there will be some kind of adjustment. People may move out of these areas, or they may become like Pittsburgh, where you have government buildings moving in and hospitals and things like that. But there does seem to be large parts of the country that are aching, and these are mostly people who voted for Trump. I don't think tariffs are the ultimate answer, by the way. I think they just give a kind of short-term, possibly middle-term relief for these economic problems. But I can understand why political leaders, particularly people representing these areas, support tariffs.
Yeah, I think that the I think that ultimately this is an issue of overpopulation, odd as that might sound. America's economy is no doubt in transition, and in these areas which used to require large numbers of people who obviously came from large families in order to work at these manufacturing jobs, that's no longer the case. And if you're transitioning to a world of ideas or simply the tech sector, you just don't need as many people to do as many things, mm-hmm. and yet these people are still here. So it begs the question of, without tariffs, what will become of them? Bob is correct that they can go get another job. In some cases, not all, I should stipulate, mm-hmm. but these jobs are typically service sector stuff, like at Walmart or I don't even think there are many Kmart left, certainly not many Ames stores left, which I remember from when I was a lad. But you can get a job, in the retail sector doing this stuff, but it's really not enough to feed a family. It's arguably not enough in many cases just to make it on your own. You almost have to be living with a roommate or a relative of some kind. So these people, without tariffs, without protection, their prospects are bleak. And that's how you're thinking about the politics of it. If you get into the politics, which Paul did, they did vote for Trump. And if Trump doesn't do stuff like this, then more of it. And what Bob said, if you look at the people that Trump has surrounded himself with, it does seem obvious that he will do more of this. But if he doesn't do this, it will be an electoral nightmare for,
well,
for Trump.
I think the reason he's doing it right now is that there is a very important congressional race in western Pennsylvania. In fact, he's flying there. He's in an airplane now going there. And you have Rick Saccone running for a Republican seat in southwestern Pennsylvania. in a district that voted for Trump won by 20% over Hillary Clinton, and this guy is running neck and neck against a former Marine who apparently favors gun rights and is much more articulate. I have no idea how the Republicans put up such a jerk, but you know, Trump is doing everything to save his seat right now. And I don't, and of course the Democrats will hail this as a great victory for their side and as an omen of what's to come, what's to happen to the Republicans in November. So I think this may have influenced Trump's decision to take on the tariff issue right now.
Yeah. Joseph, I have a question for you. You just mentioned how difficult it is for these people to survive in the Rust Belt and things like that. How is it easier for them to survive if we cut off supply and we actually have less supply of product coming into the country?
That is a good question. I think it ultimately boils down to priorities. You have less supply, that means we'll be able to purchase less goods. But if right now they don't have a lot of money to purchase goods, I doubt that will make a huge dent in their lives. But that's something definitely worth thinking about.
I got to stop you there because this is important. I think this is a big mistake that a lot of tariff people think. They think in terms of dollar wages, but you have to look at the other side of that equation and how much product there is. If there's more product in the country, even though a wage is low, you're going to be able to buy more. That's just basic supply and demand economics. A lot of misunderstanding about tariffs really goes back to the basics. If there's more supply coming into the country, it doesn't matter how much the nominal amount of dollars a person has. He's got more that he's going to be able to buy, and prices will adjust for that.
But
so Yeah, yeah, but see, there's a basic. I call it the warm body wage, okay?
Yeah.
For example, I right now I could use a butler, I could use a chauffeur, I could use an errand boy. I mean, it goes on and on. I could use someone to edit my books and do research. I mean, there are so many. If the wages were low enough, if the warm body wage was low enough, I would hire at least 10 or 15 people just off the top of my head doing things for me. The only reason I'm not doing this, I mean, I'd spend $100 a day on people, you know, whatever it is. The point is the warm body wage is much higher than that now, and that's the only reason I can't hire these people. They're going to look at me and say, you're crazy, you're nuts. I'm not going to work for that. And that only means there's other opportunities, or we have the government coming in, support paying them not to work, which is another question.
Well, you bring up something very interesting,
yeah.
and I know Paul's going to say something, but I just have to get this in quickly. The warm body wage, I don't disagree with it. I think it's correct what you're saying. It's just expensive to hire human beings to do things. But if you look at the geographic areas, which Paul was mentioning, essentially from Pennsylvania over to Waterloo, Iowa, and then going up into upstate New York, the people there, even though now they have access theoretically to more goods, which you were mentioning, they don't have the money to buy those goods en masse. And I know Bob might say I'm focusing too much on money, but I'm really looking at the purchasing power of the dollar rather than how many dollars you have. And I just don't think these people are going to get where they need to be, which isn't even a middle-class life. I'm just talking about a self-sufficient working-class life. I don't feel they'd be able to get that outside of protectionism. They would either go on welfare or they would work at Walmart or maybe some combination of the two, depending on how generous the welfare policies are in whichever state they live. So it's not a good situation. This whole discussion is
Joseph,
about...
Joseph, you're missing. If there's less goods in the country, it's worse for the people in the country. What you're doing is you're preventing a bunch of goods from coming into the country. And these people are going to have to work and produce things that others would ship in here otherwise so they could work on other projects. And if there's a warm body wage, there's something out there for them to do because otherwise, hey, come on down. I need a butler right now. I need a chauffeur. I need an errand boy. I mean, it goes on.
Yeah, but these jobs are not available in many of these Rust Belt towns where I live. I mean, you know, these are poor places. And nobody is offering them jobs to edit magazines or to be butlers, and they're used to doing one kind of job in one kind of industry. But getting back to this other question about tariffs, I don't think tariffs are a long-term solution to anything. If you take a look, for instance, at the garment industry in the United States, the garment industry had one of the most powerful and activist unions, and also one of the most radical unions. And they were around for a very, very long time, and the United Garment Workers Union did very little for their employees because they were not able to offer them a very high wage. No matter what wage we offered people to produce garments in the United States, countries in Southeast Asia could always undersell us, right? And these things would and we have tariffs, and the tariffs were only a kind of short-term solution. And I think the same thing is true with the iron and steel tariffs, that they're not going to turn around any situation. And the tariffs are at best a short-term solution. They're not going to keep cheap steel and cheap iron from coming into the country in the end. I think these things will continue to come into the country. And the areas that produce steel and iron in the United States, we're not going to turn the situation around with tariffs.
I think that what Paul mentioned about the garment industry is an excellent example of tariffs, even for someone such as myself who supports them. Some of my family used to work in the garment district in Manhattan, so I know exactly what he's talking about, even with the unions being do-nothings. An uncle of mine told me about that at length a few years ago. It's really a labyrinthine matter that you could have a whole discussion about labor relations and how those relations aren't always good for the laborers. But getting back to tariffs, it's not a long-term solution in a world which has an economy such as what we're confronted with. There's no question about that. My perspective here is advocating for the tariffs as a short-term solution, but then ultimately we want to look at something else for the long run. And I think really what it's going to have to be is people having less kids who are from these rather disadvantaged communities, but that's not going to be it right here and now. That's long term. In the short run, there has to be something to prevent these places from becoming something like a rural or semi-rural version of The Warriors. I don't know if either of you saw that movie about gangs in New York from the late 70s, but that's pretty much the dystopia that's coming about in these formerly prosperous manufacturing communities. So it's a rock and a hard place. There's no positive solution here. In an ideal world, there would be free trade because there would be a sort of labor parity between all trading countries, and you wouldn't have to deal with anything from currency manipulation being undercut by cheaper labor overseas. But that's obviously not the way it is, so that's just, you know, a rather theoretical matter.
Well, you know, I remember Murray Rothbard used to argue, you know, if China or Korea or some other country dumps goods, that's good for us because things will just be cheaper here. that was his position, I remember.
Yeah, and I think Murray's right on that. But, you know, Joseph, I'm a little bit concerned about your claim there's overpopulation. I mean, there are clearly problems. You know, what I call the urban primitives. A lot of youth in the inner city are not getting educated properly, and that's a problem. And then they see their parents on or the mother on welfare, and that doubles the problem. But I don't think it's necessarily an overpopulation problem. I mean, we're nowhere near a situation where we have more population than there's things available to do. That's not the case at all. But
If you talk generally, that's true. But I'm referring to very specific communities, in which case there are too few jobs for too many people. And I think that's one of the clearest cases of overpopulation you could hope to look at. And these people, and through no fault of their own, it's just who they are culturally, it's been their family for generations, they don't expect to work with their minds. They really just don't have a frame of reference for it to try to educate them. But I think many of them would just find this to be something useless and irrelevant to them, and it's easier then just to get a government check or to take some menial service job that they quite frankly deserve something much better than that. So it's there's no easy solution here. I think ultimately I stand by my case that it is overpopulation.
Yeah, well, Joseph, I actually think there is an easy solution, and the easy solution is to eliminate government support for people, so that they have to go out and get a job. Then we would probably be back to the days, instead of having to pump our own gasoline, we would have clerks out there gas pumping people, pumping gas. I mean, Joseph, you're young enough, you probably don't remember those days, but in the old days...
Oh, no, in New Jersey, they still
right.
do that.
Right, right. So the idea is that in the old days, everywhere clear across the country, you could pull up to a gas station, and there was a guy who would pump your gas for mm-hmm. you, and you didn't have to get out and worry about getting your clothes dirty or any of that kind of stuff. And that's not available now because... A, minimum wage laws, mm-hmm. and B, these kids are not taught basic skills to show up for work to be able to earn a warm body wage. But that problem is a problem of government interference in the economy versus a problem just overpopulation. That's not the problem. The problem is what's government doing to the population that's around.
Yeah, I do think there is an overpopulation problem. But it's not really the poor working class; it's the underclass, and they really are a social drain, and make cities unsafe and so forth. But there also are people who are just sort of working class poor who seem to have just given up, and you see them in small towns here, and some of them get up and move into large cities. I don't know if they do much better in large or medium cities, but then a lot of them just stay where they are. And, you know, if there were a job available, for instance, in a steel factory, they would work there.
How are they surviving, Paul? If they're
well, I think the way they survive is they have part-time work, and some of them do get checks from the government. I think Bob is right that if those government checks were not available, they probably would have to get up and go somewhere else. But you find a lot of these sort of working poor, the people that Charles Murray writes about, living in small towns with sort of a sense of hopelessness. They don't get up and necessarily move to large cities. Many of them take drugs, which are being spread here. No, I don't think tariffs are really are any kind of long term solution. But it's not likely that these people are going to look for jobs as chauffeurs or certainly can't be book editors. And I think their employment possibilities
are very
limited.
Yeah, I employ a guy that has done some book editing for me, and he was probably involved in some very minimum wage kind of thing. So it's not a case where everybody's going to do it. Again, with the division of labor, there are people that are good at some things and other people that are good at other things. And, mm-hmm. and there are some that if they weren't drawn, say, into the steel sector because of tariffs, might be able to develop. I'm not saying everybody on the bell curve is going to do that, but some people on the right end of the bell curve would certainly be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But your large chunk of people are just going to who have no particular talent or skill are just going to earn a warm body wage, which in the United States is really not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as jobs and working, I take Uber frequently here in San Francisco, and I like to talk to the Uber drivers so much so that one of them asked me if I was a researcher, and I said, well, why do you ask that? Asking her another question, and she says, because you're asking questions like only researchers come into my car and ask questions
right.
like you do. And but what's really interesting is most of these people, this is their second job for them, and they've got it planned out. They know exactly what hours they're working and where they can make the money and what makes sense for them, and each one has a different particular plan. And that's a skill that's not that hard to learn. Plan out your schedule and see where you can make some money. And the problem is these government checks coming in, which give people the ability to lay back and say, oh my, it's terrible, I can't find a job, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, cut the checks off, and they're going to find something really, really fast. That's just
the
way
the
world works.
The checks will never be cut off. Because
hopefully someday, but I don't see it anytime future. Right,
yeah.
right. Yeah, yeah.
I will add my last 2 cents of the conversation in, and then everyone can go around and do the same. something Paul mentioned is interesting. I think it sums up well a huge component of this discussion, regardless of whatever one should think about it. He mentioned the working class and the underclass, and he said overpopulation was worse among the under was a problem among the underclass, not the working class. The issue now is that the working class is becoming the underclass. And in some areas, people are working poor, so there's not a big discernible difference there to begin with. It's really scary stuff, and that goes back to the dystopia, which I was mentioning. And the goal should be for the government to do something immediately to prevent this dystopia from sort of proliferating, and then in the future look toward a way of alleviating it. And I really do think the only way to do that is by some form of promotion of population control. Honestly, it has to be voluntary, unless you're talking about something legally permissible under Buck v. Beller, Skinner v. Oklahoma, but that's not really what we're getting into here. But it's there's no easy way out of this that I can see. The tariffs, the talk of free or fair trade, it all boils down to the fact that the economy is changing for a large number of people, and that change is not positive. So how is everyone else going to interact within the economy in order to sort of make a semi-agreeable situation, or at least one as much as possible, across certain parts of the country? So that's pretty much what I think the situation is in a nutshell.
Yeah, by the way, the working poor in the United States do not have any kind of explosive population. You know, they, according to Murray, they're not reproducing very fast.
That's true. It's the question of the people who are already here, though. What will become of them in the future? And to stop people from joining their ranks, in which case, of course, there would be a very big crisis there.
Right.
I think it's a mix of being reactive and proactive now that the government would have to be. But it's terrible that the situation got to this point as it is. I mean, it's such a bad point that, like I said, there's no happy ending to it.
Yeah, I would say from my perspective, I mean, the problem really is the government intervention causing these problems. Again, everything from the poor education, the minimum wages, and the checks go out to people to incentivize them not to work. So I don't think the answer is bringing in more government policy to try and central plan the economy any more than what's going on now. And that what should we should take a lesson from Ludwig Erhard and the German economic miracle, and it's time for an American miracle here, where we take these people off the dole, get rid of public schools, and eliminate the minimum wage, and let freedom reign.
One last point to make, just a clarification of what I said about Paul's perspective on the underclass and population trends. Mm-hmm. The rural to semi-rural, where a lot of these Rust Belt towns are, the underclass there, it's not expanding rapidly. He's right. The underclass in major cities, though, is expanding rapidly. You have two different classes of the underclass, if that makes any difference. I just don't want anyone to think that we overlooked that and had a sort of erroneous analysis of the situation.
I would also emphasize the point that although I don't think the government does very much good, it's highly unlikely if the government is going to step back from any of the activities that it's assumed, nor do I see any kind of pressure from the electorate to make the government get out of providing these somewhat questionable economic solutions.
Yeah, Paul, I would agree with you there. On a short term, it does not seem that we're in for any kind of change away from government intervention in more central planning economy. I mean, that does not seem to be in the cards in the short term. And in the long term, it's a battle for us to really change the minds of people who sort of influence the masses. I mean, that's the only way that's going to happen.
Yeah, but what do you think if the country is going to be inundated with illegals from Central America and from other areas who are going to vote for more government programs? They're not going to vote for less. You know, they're not going to read Ludwig von Mises or Ludwig Erhard. These people just want the government to look after them.
Well, there's two things there. First of all, I don't really see the masses ever reading Mises, Hayek, Rothbard, any of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the job for us, to get to other secondhand dealers in ideas who get the simple version of the Mises, Hayek, Rothbard perspective out there, whatever that. I mean, my dream, I'm coming out with this book called Private Property Society, where I advocate a private property society, and my dream is for Beyonce to sing this, you know, give me PPS, give me PPS, I want PPS now, you know, I've got a PPS flag in my house. I mean, that's not going to happen. But if Beyonce did that, then a whole bunch of people would know about Private Property Society for PPS. That's a long, long way from that coming, but that's the only way you can change the masses. And,
right.
And you know, as far as people coming in here, I mean, I think a lot of them, especially the illegals, I prefer them illegal than legal in the country, because then they're really going after our services. I prefer them illegal where they keep their head down and
right.
try
right.
not to get too many services.
But you don't see any solution in California.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, you know, the average person in California really doesn't really see a problem with the illegals, because we're living with these people, and the problems, I never cross the street when I see a Mexican or an Asian who may, they're illegal Asians here also.
Mm-hmm.
It's the urban primitives brought up by the United States government education system that we worry about, and we have to cross the street when we see these people.
Right.
So
right.
it's not those people. And to the degree that they do come here to demand more services, I mean, they're just going to bankrupt the country and it won't work. So, you know, I'm more concerned about the long-term big picture of trying to figure out how we can get the ideas turned around at a very, very high level, so secondhand dealers go out there and start spreading the word about the value of freedom and liberty and that kind of thing, and the opposite of what's going on now, because it's a wreck now.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you next week.